Try something. It's a line that I was taught as a child. My hunch is you were taught it as well, but I want to see if you can finish the line. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but whoever came up with that phrase never went to middle school. Am I right? Words hurt. Words can hurt. Words wound. There's an old rabbi saying, a Jewish saying, where the rabbi would tell the students, your tongue is like an arrow. And the student says back, no, 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 isn't the tongue more like a sword? The rabbi says, no, because when you pull out a sword and the person pleads for mercy, you can put the sword back. But an arrow, once it's shot, is already gone. Words can wound. Words, the tongue is like an arrow. Or, to use the words of James, the tongue is a rudder. It's tiny compared to the ship, but it can guide, steer the whole thing. Your tongue is like a match, small as can be, but you can take a forest that took centuries to grow, and you can burn the whole thing down with a word. We're looking at words today. The words that we say, the words that we don't say. Do we have integrity? Do we have truth? One of my pet peeves is when somebody goes, now I'll be honest with you. Like, well, what were you just doing? Right? So I'll be honest with you today. No! Hopefully when I'm up here, it's always honest. We're going through the Ten Commandments, and we've made it to the ninth commandment. Now, I want to be the same as we always have. You cannot go to the Ten Commandments and find salvation. If you go to the Ten Commandments, you will only find yourself in need of salvation. So we're going to take the same format that we've been taking. We're going to first look at how we break the ninth commandment. Then I'm going to actually drill down. If you'll let me, I'd like to take the elevator even further down. Not just how we break them, but I want to look at why we break this commandment. Why do we lie? And then lastly, we'll land on who? Who can transform us? That's the plan. That's the path. The commandment is don't bear false witness against your neighbor. Simply in two words, we could say never lie. But you know, if I tell you there's a liar, immediately trust goes out the window. It's the same, both the eighth and the ninth commandment. If you want to go back and listen to the eighth one, it's very similar. It destroys community. And Jesus, as we follow Jesus, he's building community. All right, so let's jump in. How we break it, why we break it, and who can really transform us. How do we break the ninth commandment? Well, there's obviously just the garden variety lie. But it's also the half-truths that we tell, the twisting of the words. Now, you might be thinking, Pastor, is that really, come on, is it a big deal? Can I remind us how this whole mess got started? The father of lies, Satan, said to Eve, did God really say? And then sin enters the world. This whole mess that we're in, the problem with all of humanity, all of creation, began with, did God really say? A slight twist, but a breaking of the ninth commandment. We break it when we enhance stories. You know, enhance stories. Like, was it really that close of a putt? Was the fish really that big? Were that many people really at the party? Was she going that slow in front of you on the way to church? But it's still a lapse in integrity and a breaking of the ninth commandment. If it hurts, the first one always is going to hurt us a little bit, right? And I hope to, as I've done every week, just offend everybody. Two of the big ones that are included in this, it has to do with how we talk about others. That we bear false witness against our neighbor. Now, you may not be on the stand lately, so that's not necessarily applying to us. But two things that apply to us almost daily are both gossip and slander, which is a violation of the ninth commandment. You know gossip. Gossip is passing on a rumor that isn't true. You know what gossip also is? Passing on a truth that didn't need to be shared. And saying, bless his heart, doesn't save it from breaking the ninth commandment. And then saying, oh, but it's a prayer request, doesn't rescue it either. It's not just gossip, it's also slander. Slander is spreading a false report to tear someone else down. The reason we do this, let's be honest, sometimes it feels good to take somebody down a peg. That we assume the worst and then we report it as fact. But did you really check your facts? Did you really check your facts before you posted it? Yeah, think about social media. How rampant, let's name it, slander is. I was in high school and I saw a poster. It said, think before you post. And THINK was an acronym. You ready? T, is it true? H, is it helpful? I, is it inspiring? N, is it necessary? K, is it kind? What if we all thought, not just before we posted, but before we spoke? We're in a really contentious time as we head towards an election. Are we checking our facts, or are we just sharing cheap digs? Are we resisting memes? Are we creating beautiful content that can transcend the bitterness and invite us into a better world, even if we disagree? How do we break it? With gossip, with slander. There's a story of a woman who struggled with gossip. This is from the 16th century. This is in Italy. She goes to St. Philip. He became a saint. This time, it's just her priest. And she comes to him to confess gossip. Now, she doesn't quite understand the severity of her gossip. He does, because he's actually been the recipient of some of her gossip. So she confesses, and he gives her her penance. He says to take a feather pillow to the top of a bell tower, and rip it open and release the feathers. Then return to me. Now she thought that was strange, but she climbs the church bell tower, rips it open, and as the wind blows, those feathers scatter the same way her gossip has all over town. She comes back and says, Father, am I forgiven? And he says, nope. Not until you take the pillowcase and go pick up all of those feathers. Now, you and I both know you can't earn your forgiveness. We'll get to that in the third point. But let's be honest, we got feathers all over town. But why? Why? I promise to be tender, as a pastor can be, as we drill down. I want to take the elevator down as to why do we actually do this? Because you know, you've been there. It's a snap conversation, and instead of the truth, you just, boop, tweak it a notch. Yeah, we could say it's self-interest, or it's easy, it's comfortable, it makes me look better, sure. But will you go with me, just for a moment, down an elevator into our deepest heart of hearts? And what I would point out is we do it because of our shame, and we do it because of our fear. Here's what I mean. In the heat of the moment, there's an autopilot inside you and me that kicks in. It's an autopilot that's been there since you were 6. So go with me to the ball field, 8-year-old boy. And they're running out, and you're going out to second. And your friend runs over and says, hey, where's your dad? And you know he just keeps missing these games. But you hear a voice that says, you're not enough. You're not loved. He's not here because you're not enough. And so what do? It's honest survival instinct to lie. You turn and say to him, well, he's got a really important job. He's a CEO. He travels a lot. And that little baseball player becomes your autopilot. Or the first grade girl who goes to school on Monday morning and you hear, well, why weren't you at the party on Saturday? It was a blast. And immediately you hear the message, you don't belong because you weren't invited. You knew about the party, but you were not invited. And so shame kicks in. And in that moment, it's a survival instinct. And you say, oh, I was at my aunt's house. And an autopilot is born in your little heart. And each one of us does it to resist that voice that says, you're not enough, you don't belong, and you made a commitment, and I made a commitment, never again. I don't want to feel that pain. But what has happened? Now a third grader is running our lives. It's shame. That's why we do it. It's also fear. It's fear that our past would be found out. We don't want to be discovered. We don't want to be found out. I'm afraid for you to know who I really am, because if you knew who I really was, would you still love me? So what do? I put a divided self forward and a true self behind. And so we hide and we cover up and we deceive and skew and divert and ignore. I think we're also fearful because it's a complex world. We lie because we want everything to be black and white. We want everything to be easily understood. We lie and we accept lies. Yes, I'm about to go there into politics. Because this world is extremely complicated. And I don't want to have to deal with how complicated it is. So you know what I do? I choose a news source that aligns with me and confirms my bias, and then I can call everything else fake news. I'll find the person who will simplify the issue, because a border crisis is way too complicated. So I'm going to pick a guy that'll just call them animals and dehumanize them. Or to deal with the complexities of our world, it's so easy to just call somebody evil or Hitler. If you think one party has a market on truth, I'm not sure I can help you. We are in a post-truth world. Because truth takes time. Truth takes guts. Truth takes compassion. Truth means I might have to sit here and be uncomfortable as I learn just how complex this story is. That I can't just fire off a quick answer. Or worse, truth might tell me that I'm wrong. We lie. We do it because of our shame. We do it because of our fears. So where can I go to heal my shame? Where can I go to hear I am enough? Where can I go to hear I belong? Who could cast out my fear? Who could I go to in times of complexity? Who can I go to in times of uncertainty? Who can shine light inside of me and into this world to offer hope and healing? Who? Jesus Christ. He is our third point. Who can really transform us? Jesus. And I don't say that in a cliche way. What I want to do is actually take this idea of truth as a thread and follow it through the life of Jesus all the way to his death and to his resurrection. Are you ready? This is the stuff I love. Jesus is the truth. Jesus, when he was born, Trust me, I won't take forever, but I do need to start when he was born. Because it says, the light shines into the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome him. He starts his ministry by preaching a kingdom that is not of this world. He doesn't draw on the powers of this world. He preaches and teaches with truth and grace. He doesn't use a sword, he uses a table. He doesn't debate, he uses story and parable. And then he says, I am, Yahweh, I am the way, the truth, and the life. This gets him in a lot of trouble. You can't make this stuff up. What I tell you, like, I love to look at the Old Testament and then see how Jesus is the fulfillment. You know what got him arrested? It was people literally breaking the ninth commandment. They make up a false testimony about him. You can't make this up. It's perjury. The religious leaders collude with the political leaders, and together they break the ninth commandment in order to have Jesus arrested, tried, and executed. And at that kangaroo court, there are feathers flying everywhere. It lands him right in front of Pilate, the political leader. Can I zoom in on this? John 18, let's go there. Because here you have this political leader, and he's looking at Jesus, and he says, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world, or my servants would be fighting. Notice the nonviolent resistance. Pilate says, so you are a king. Jesus, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world. Listen up. To bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. And then the moment that Pilate is looking Jesus in the face and he says, what is truth? Freeze right here. Pilate has made so many compromises of integrity along the way to get to this very moment, so much so that he can't recognize truth when it's staring him in the face. He has lost sight of truth. Like many people we know, maybe even like ourselves, we have lost sight of truth. How many times have you and I asked the question, what is truth? She comes home late from curfew. What's the truth? When we're speaking about somebody that we're not fond of, what is truth? When the doctor asks if you've been exercising, what is truth? When we're watching the news, what is truth? When we're asked how many drinks we've had, what is truth? When we're asked about our search history on the web browser, what is truth? When we examine our hearts and our fears and our shames, what is truth? Here's the thing, truth is not some abstract or elusive idea. Pilate has the opportunity to look truth in the eye, to let the light shine in, because truth is a person. And this is the moment of truth, before the truth, because his name is Jesus. That's truth. So come back to this moment, right? Where Jesus and Pilate are looking at each other. Because here's a man who holds no record of wrongs. I don't have to be ashamed anymore. Here's a man whose love drives out fear. I don't have to be afraid anymore. Here's a man whose truth establishes a lasting kingdom that is not of this world. He is establishing a kingdom right there in front of Pilate, not by besting others, not by tearing down, not by dehumanizing, not by courting the masses, not by exciting the crowds, not by violence or force. Here is a man who will establish his kingdom by selflessly laying down his life in love. This is the moment that will send him to the cross, but this is his way, that he is the truth that brings about eternal life. Life. And that kingdom is available to you now. You don't have to be like Pilate. You don't have to miss it. You can enter Jesus' kingdom today. You can put down the weapons of this world. You can put down the lies and the tweets and the memes and the pot shots and the zingers and the digs and the cuts. You can be done with your autopilot. You don't have to live with feathers everywhere anymore. You can live with the truth now, and you can walk in the truth now. You can say, Jesus, I want to put the real me, warts and all, in front of the real you and be in your kingdom because of your unconditional love for me and what you have done on the cross for me. Follow this through line, because it gets better. He didn't just die. He's then raised to new life. And you know who gets the message of the truth, of the good news? It's women who wouldn't even be credible in court during that day. And they're the ones who, can't make this stuff up, they don't bear false witness against their neighbor. They bear witness to the truth to their neighbor. And then Acts 1:8, what does Jesus tell us? You will be my witnesses. You. Go do this. Don't bear false witness. Bear witness to the truth. See, friends, we know the truth. He has a name. We have a relationship with the truth. We are knowers of the truth, therefore we can be bringers of the truth. Now, that bell is not the 11 o'clock bell. Just to remind you. That bell tells me that it's almost 11. So I want to end by saying this. You know what our world needs right now? A revival of personal integrity. We are headed into a mess of lies. But you can spend time with the truth. You can live in the truth. You can say, Lord, I want my true self, my undivided self, my forgiven self, my beloved self to be before you. And would that your prayer and my prayer be, because we want to make disciples, we want to follow the truth, we want to be with Jesus, we want to become like Jesus, we want to do the things that Jesus would do. This is the prayer. Lord, I put the real me before the real you. If I'm in your truth, O God, keep me there. If I'm not in your truth, put me there. A revival of personal integrity. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.